If I literally whispered to Comer, he wouldn't hear me. I mean, that's why I have to yell. I have to yell so it like gets in there and like bing, bing, ping pongs. Like
bing, bong, bing, bong,
there's
bong.
Like, well, there's space. There's a lot of space in there. So I need it to echo inside.
Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened.
There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
Good night and good luck.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Lincoln Project Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Rick Wilson. I'm joined today by my friend Jared Moskowitz. He is the man they call the Comer Whisperer. He is one of the funniest and sharpest folks in Congress, and he has some fun going at a lot of the absurdities and weirdnesses of today's Republican Congress and trying to drive forward a real contrast with what these people say they want to do and what they're ending up doing. Hey, so Jared, welcome to the show, man, as always.
Hey, I want to start with you.
Thanks, man. I want to start out just asking you, like, how well the tariffs are going for America. Like, are we rich yet?
First of all, you're not entertained that we tariffed the whole world simultaneously. I mean, Rick, I don't remember, like, in between all of his speeches, okay, and talking about how we fantasized having dinner with Hannibal Lecter.
Silence of the Lambs. Has anyone ever seen a Silence of the Lambs? The late, great Hannibal Lecter is a wonderful man. He oftentimes would have a friend for dinner.
That he was going to tariff the whole world at the same time, friend and foe alike. It went so well, by the way, that the bond market threw up on it 4 days later and we had to start walking it back. But the damage actually in the plumbing of the economy is more serious, I think, than people are recognizing. You know, yeah, the stock market recovered a little bit. But we're not out of the woods at the moment. And actually the sad part about all of this is that, and I'm someone who, you know, did the COVID response, so understands the supply chain and where we could fix things. There is definitely, we need to onshore more things back to the country. Can't be everything, of course, because we got to keep prices down. But yeah, we can be onshoring stuff back. And had that just been the mission, like trying to figure out how to onshore stuff back with China, like the Democrats did with the Chips and Science Act, which Republicans voted against, that's onshoring, okay? This would have been a bipartisan effort, but no, Trump wasn't capable of doing that, of course, right? He couldn't say, you know, the execution of this has just been a total nightmare, hurting small businesses, you know, hurting Americans, tax increases because prices of goods are going up. You know, he told everyone the economy was terrible and the stock market was bad. It's worse now in the first 100 days. But that is the golden age, Rick. It is the golden age. I feel golden, man. Well, eggs are the price of gold. So it is absolutely the golden age. It is the golden age. I mean, look, this is what it's going to be. So, you know, everyone put on their big boy pants and buckle up because this is the ride we're on.
Right. And it's not going to get any less crazy. It is a theory I've held from the beginning. He will escalate. And a lot of your colleagues in the House on the Republican side, they know it's actually technically Congress's responsibility to deal with tariffs, not the president's. But they just handed him the keys to the car after he said, hey, I'm lit up on old English 800. I want to go driving.
Well, it's funny. Like we Democrats said, you know, MAGA wants to take us backwards, mm-hmm. right? We've been saying that for a long time. Many of us didn't realize that we were going to go back to the tax policies of 1935, that we were also going to bring back the dire wolf. We didn't realize we were going back 10,000 years. Okay. I mean, it's...
Plus measles, polio, the whole thing.
Yeah, measles is back, by the way. Measles is back. They got the band back together, doing a reunion tour, okay? Brought back the measles. So yeah, look, this is what it's going to be. And no, I think actually, Rick, it will get crazier.
Sure.
Okay? Because as we get further into the term, okay, I just think it will get crazier, especially as we get into election season. My Republican colleagues, what they say in private is very different than they say in public because, sure. quite frankly, they're just worried about a primary. Even the ones that are in frontline districts
yep.
that are trying to mount a stand on Medicaid, they're still worried about getting primaried, right? And so if you're out there and you're saying, where's the red line for Republicans? There is no red line in the House. In the House, there's no red line. In the Senate, I saw some senators push back on this third term thing. Ted Cruz, right? You know, Kennedy, Josh Hawley. So, yeah, look, that was positive that they remembered we had a constitution.
It's good to keep that in mind once in a while.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of the stuff that these Republicans are, you can tell their fear factor is really high. And, you know, we talk about town halls the other day. And the idea, reason they're
going
not.
Well, by the way, I think those are
going I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene's having people tased at her town hall. I mean, that strikes me as like a really like sane, civilized.
First of all, being locked in a room for 2 hours with Marjorie Taylor Greene literally sounds like hell to me. Like, if you're not a believer in heaven or hell, that is definitely a version of hell to be.
Look, I believe international law says that that's a war crime.
Okay.
Being pinned in a room with Marjorie Taylor Greene for longer than 3 minutes.
I mean, by the way, God bless those people that went to go challenge her. But I can't believe anyone would want to be in a room with her own colleagues. Don't want to be in a room with her. Okay.
You know, she's a truly, and I don't mean this as in a partisan way. I've heard this from multiple people. She is a unlikable person. She's a bad person. And of all
the people I serve with in the House. Mm-hmm. Okay. Some of them are characters, right? They have these personas, but she is the worst of the worst, right? You'll like be walking in the hallway getting your coffee and she'll just yell at you and be like, you're a communist. You'll be like, oh my God, I'm just putting sugar in my coffee. Okay. Like either she never gets out of character or she is just awful all of the time. I mean, she just looks miserable. Okay.
Yeah, that's...
Like, I don't know that I've ever seen her smile.
That's one of the things. It's like I would almost feel differently about a lot of these MAGA folks if they were having any kind of fun. They're just not. They are unhappy and always unhappy.
She's the worst. And every time I like bump into her, I think to myself, if you're here, who's running hell? Like, I mean, it's just like I can't I loathe her. In ways that I don't really feel about any other Republican I serve with. I'm being serious. The drop off between her and everybody else is like it's so significant. And if you polled Republicans and Democrats alike, she would be the number one.
No doubt about it. And she's a character that can only exist in this day and age. But a lot of these guys, they don't want to hold town halls. I think, you know, we all know that they're behind the eight ball on. They're worried about people coming to talk about VA cuts, Social Security cuts, Medicare cuts.
Yeah.
They're worried about all that. But I think a lot of them are also worried that they're going to have people walking in and saying, well, why aren't you doing more with Elon? Why aren't you cutting more? Why aren't you doing more of what Trump wants? Why aren't you, you know, why aren't you, you know, putting Granny out on the iceberg because we're done feeding her? I think a lot of them are afraid their biggest fear in the world is something coming from the right. In their world these days.
Well, look, especially if you're in a moderate district, like you get it from both sides at that point, right? And so, yeah, for those people that they want to avoid that. I mean, I'll tell you this, look, there's a lot going on at the moment, right? That's what chaos is. You throw all of this stuff, you flood the zone, you try to redirect, right? I mean, the two top issues in my opinion for Democrats right now are the economy, right, which is tariffs and all this other stuff that Trump's doing. Okay, and the cuts to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Those are the two things we should be talking about. Those are the two things Trump is losing on, okay? Trump would much rather us talk about immigration, okay? He would, because that's still a winning issue for him in the data sets. And when we're talking about immigration, we're not talking about how Trump is literally ruining the economy. And so in my opinion, those are the two top issues. And Republicans, if you've watched, they have almost an unbearable time trying to figure out how to defend the tariffs and the cuts to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid that are being considered and proposed by some in Washington.
Yeah, I think the idea, especially in states like Florida and Arizona, that are going to have a few hot seats running in the next election, the idea that you would not beat up every day on cutting Social Security and cutting Medicare and cutting VA benefits in states that are stacked heavily with seniors and veterans and retirees, call me crazy, but as outrageous as things like El Salvadorian prison camps are, politically, where the voters are going to be moved is a destroyed economy and a wrecked Social Security and Medicare system.
Yeah, look, I have 160,000 people that are on Social Security in my district. I represent Boca Raton.
Okay? Right. I was going to say, that's Boca for you.
Yeah. I mean, so, yeah, they're focused on Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, because a lot of people have an overlap, obviously, with Social Security and Medicare. And then there's a huge overlap with Social Security and Medicaid as well.
Yep.
Okay. And so, and then I, the amount of calls I'm getting to my office now to do casework, right? Their checks that are not showing up and things that is dramatically up, not twofold or threefold, tenfold. And people are, and people are very scared. That has boiled all the way down to the surface. People understand what's going on, what's being proposed. They're tuned into that. You know, a lot of people tune out all this stuff. The two things, Rick, that they've not tuned out is the tariffs, what happened to the economy. You know, yes, only 60% of Americans are in the stock market, but a lot of them have pensions. A lot of them have 401ks, right? You know, they're on fixed incomes. And then the rest, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, almost fills the other gap, okay? And then, you know, obviously some issues affect certain districts differently. And then the stuff that the administration, actually, I don't even want to say the administration, the stuff that Kristi Noem is proposing, okay, to cut FEMA, okay? People in Florida are devastated, desperately worried about these potential cuts to FEMA.
100%.
I mean, let me tell you about the Republican areas. Okay, I did the recovery in Hurricane Michael when I was the director of emergency management in the Panhandle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, some of the poorest areas in the state, all red, all vote for, you know, Ron DeSantis, Rick Scott, Donald Trump. Without 100%. The federal money that came into those areas, those towns, Rick, are gone. They never recover. Yep. A town that has a $5 million budget but $30 million worth of damage ceases to exist. It goes away. The state, even though Florida is a rich state, the state is not just going to go raid their DOT fund, their healthcare fund, their education fund year after year. And we have
to rebuild Liberty County or whatever.
Correct. Or correct. That's exactly right. That's not what's going to happen. And that's Florida, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama. They go bankrupt. They go bankrupt. Those three states go bankrupt.
Those states go bankrupt for sure.
Those states go bankrupt without FEMA. South Carolina, bankrupt without FEMA. You get an F4, F5 tornado, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Kentucky floods, bankrupt without FEMA. So the red states are in a dramatically worse position if FEMA goes away. Texas and Florida obviously have a little more capabilities, a little more resources. They get a double whammy, which has happened many times. Two storms in one season, they also have problems. They can't afford $10 billion out of the budget.
Well, and in Florida particularly, if we get a major storm and don't have FEMA coverage, at the same time as we've already have a collapsing property insurance market in the state, that drags the country down. That is a multi-trillion dollar problem that nobody's ready to handle.
Well, and our number one economy here, Rick, is what? Tourism.
Yep.
So if areas aren't rebuilt, if they're not recovering, okay, if they're still seeing devastation, people emotionally just don't travel to the state. That, right. You know, you could have a hurricane in Dade County. It affects Orlando, right? Because people just don't come. So to Florida, it would be tremendously devastating in the event they did that. And this is how they would do it. They can't get rid of FEMA programs because those are in statute. They just won't send the money out, Rick, which is what they're doing everywhere else.
Everywhere.
They just won't send the money out. And that's what will devastate the community, because the expectation will be that the money will come and then it won't.
You know, it's like the big stuff, this like meta stuff that they're doing about Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, FEMA, these things that are, it's like the tone deafness about the states that Republicans are dominant in blows my mind. It's, you know, and again, you mentioned Kristi Noem, you know, she and Tom Homan, they're now deporting. There's a lot of shock and awe in your part of the world, especially in Broward and Miami-Dade.
Well, look, I've seen some polling coming out of Dade County, and the numbers have flipped by double digits, okay, in Dade County for support for the administration and the president.
Yep.
Okay.
And it's not a coincidence that they're like, oh, the Cubans are like, wait, they're deporting what? They want to sit, what? Cubans? It's because they've always had a special status.
Well, and we have a big Venezuelan population.
Exactly.
In South Broward.
as somebody said, you know, you want to wonder, you want to wonder what happens when all these people that voted for Trump, and whose families were completely all on board with Trump, and half of their folks, half of their friends and relatives are going to get deported. And it's like Homan and Noam, they're like characters from some bad 1990s, like villain movie. And they're going to come down to South Florida and do this, and it's going to blow out. I mean, if I'm Salazar down there, one of your neighbors, I'm sleeping with one eye open right now.
We'll be right back. And now back to the show.
Well, look, it's a double whammy in that, you know, Florida right now is very red, right? There's 1.2 million more Republicans registered than Democrats. The House, the Senate, the whole cabinet, everyone's Republican. Two senators are Republican. It's very red. We only have 7 Democrats left in the congressional delegation. Yep. Okay. But this double whammy for Florida of the Cuban population feeling threatened and FEMA. Okay.
Yeah.
That double whammy will inject not only new money, but new energy into the Democratic Party, and could cause them problems in 2 years if they're not careful. Okay. Even with the numbers as they are, okay, could cause them problems in 2 years.
Well, I think look, the Florida Republican Party, of which I was a, you know, reasonably large part for a long time, they have they're having what I call victory disease right now. I mean, I don't know if you've been following this in Tallahassee the last few days.
Oh, yeah.
Ron DeSantis, who a couple years ago, everybody, was 10 feet tall and covered with titanium and bulletproof in every way. He and Casey DeSantis are at war right now, not with the Democrats, but with their own Republican colleagues in the House, who found out that Casey DeSantis took $10 million from a charity that she runs and gave it to one of the DeSantis political committees. It's an actual scandal that's breaking through even among Republicans here.
Well, here's what's going on. And what's happening to the Republicans happened to the Democrats in the Lawton Child days. Okay. Yep. And I don't want to take people back down a history lesson, but when the Democrats controlled all of Tallahassee and the Republicans were irrelevant because Democrats had full control, at that point, the only one to fight was amongst yourselves.
Sure.
Okay. And that's where the Republicans are. The Democratic Party is so irrelevant in the House and so irrelevant in the Senate. The only ones that they can fight with is amongst themselves, the corporate Republicans, the MAGA Republicans, the flat earth Republicans. They're all, all the different factions, okay, are fighting amongst themselves. The question really is going to be, will Democrats be ready to pounce and take advantage of it? Republicans were ready because they saw it coming. They started raising money during the Lawton Childs days and they were ready. But also we didn't have the gerrymandering then that we have now. Right. So between the Democratic Party not having the money, the infrastructure and the gerrymandering, I'm not convinced that we can take full advantage of it in the state House and the state Senate. It's really the governor's race where maybe we can take advantage of it. I mean, remember, Trump won the state by 13. DeSantis won his reelection by 19. These are huge numbers that we've never seen in Florida, you know, in recent times. We start getting that into polling back in the single digits. They start getting worried.
I think that's right. And I, you know, and I came back to Florida after I worked for Bush 41, came back to Florida, was, you know, moved to Tallahassee and in 1994. And this was a state that was closely divided at the time. It was the classic purple state, all that business. And I will say the number one focus once we took control of the Senate was the 2000 redistricting, yeah, which has had a knock-on effect to even right now. And you know, my ex worked the redistricting. She did the redistricting. And it was like a lot of Democrats at the time were like, okay, well, they'll protect me enough and it won't be that bad. And oh, it got that bad.
No, Democrats made deals with them that turned out to be historically catastrophic. I mean, I know the history of that. We don't need to go too much into it to bore right. everyone on the podcast. But yeah, Democrats made deals that sealed their fate for the next 100 years.
There were a couple of African American members were like, well, I'd like 75% African American in my district or higher, when they could have won with 30 or 40.
Right. So when they pack those districts,
yep,
we decrease the amount of Democratic.
Corrin, yeah, yep. The whole thing. The future that's coming, I think, is redistricting still matters. But I think I have a sense in Florida in particular that the victory disease has made the Republicans very corrupt. The infighting is picking up. I mean, I think the Byron Donalds, Casey DeSantis primary is going to be savage. I think it's going to be a bloodbath.
You know, if it happens, it will be a bloodbath.
Yes.
I'm not convinced yet that it happens.
You know, Casey's people or Ron's people, Casey's, whatever you want to do it, however you want to call it, Lady Macbeth's people, they're already dumping Oppo on Donalds, which there's Oppo on Donalds. And I think they're warming up for it. And I've never in my history in politics in any state, I've worked in 39 states and nationally, I've never seen a more bitter pair of winners than Ron and Casey DeSantis.
Here's what I would say, right? No matter how we feel about Donald Trump, within a Republican primary, running against Trump, okay, as the governor learned the first time, okay, is not only bad, right? It can be career ending, okay. And so, if the president, he's already endorsed Byron, as has Don Jr., okay, if the president puts all his weight behind Byron, okay. Mm-hmm. Then this is that, in my opinion, anyone who decides to run against Byron within a Republican primary, they're going to go scorched earth on that person.
Right.
Whether it's Casey or anybody. Anyone who's going to go up against the Trump machine in a Republican primary in Florida, which is MAGAville, okay, between DeSantis and Trump, okay, you're going to be going into a shredder, okay, of social media. And it doesn't matter what they got on Byron. Donald Trump, the stamp of approval in a Republican primary at this moment in time, right? Because the primary is going to start, okay? Figure May, June, July, okay? You know, we'll start seeing that when session ends. And I think Casey would need to get in then. I think if Casey's going to run, she's got to get in, you know, the May, June timeframe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that that the anticipation of this among a lot of Trump people is this is their final revenge on DeSantis. And I think that's appealing to them.
We'll be right back. And now, back to the show.
But to pull back out from Florida for a second, I want to talk about, you know, we're looking at this sweeping set of economic problems that the country's facing. And I look back, and this feels a lot like 1994 did, when Democrats were like, oh, don't worry about it. We've got it in the bag. It's fine. The House bank scandal's a nothing burger. And in 2010, when they were like, oh, everybody loves Obamacare, and the Republicans came up, and they were getting yelled at. The Democrats were getting yelled at in town hall meetings those years. Now it's on the other foot. If you're Mike Johnson every day, who to my mind, and I've been around for a number of House speakers now, he's all-time high on the weird scale. If you're Mike Johnson and your numbers are already this narrow, there's a possibility he loses control of this thing, and not with like a 4 or 5 seat change nationally, but like a 15 or 20 seat change nationally. What do you think, what crazy shit are they going to try to pull off between now and Election Day next year? What do you think that their whole card is? What are they going to try to do other than like be lockstep for Trump?
Well, I mean, let me say this. So on the Mike Johnson front, I think the interesting piece of that is Mike Johnson actually hates his job, okay?
Oh, yeah. You can tell.
He is a babysitter, okay, for, you know, 30 members that at any time are having, you know, a mental health breakdown, okay, that he's got to deal with, okay? And so oh yeah, like he just, and every time I talk to him, and he's always very nice to me and very cordial, he just looks exhausted with his own people. Okay, so you know that he's got the worst job in all of Congress right now, trying to you know babysit these people. You know, but at the same time, I think Mike Johnson understands his fate is tied to Trump, right? It's all he's not an independent speaker like we've seen in the past. It's all tied to Trump. The bills they're passing are all because Trump can pass them. And by the way, Trump has signed the least amount of bills in the first 100 days in the last 70 years. And that's a big problem. And that's not just a Trump thing. It's a big problem that we had the 118th Congress, one of the least productive Congresses in modern history. The 119th is making the 118th Congress look like a Mensa candidate. Like we're doing even less. Okay. We're doing even less than what I thought was the least amount we could do. Like we're not interested in working or passing bills anymore in the legislature. And that's a problem because you see when the executive branch has someone who wants to use the power that's vested there and you have a weakened legislature, it's just the courts, and the courts have no enforcement mechanism. And so that's how we find ourselves in this dynamic. You know, as far as the elections are concerned, okay, look, we have a long way to go.
Sure.
I think Democrats need to reflect on this piece, right? Which is, there were a lot of people that voted for Donald knowing that it wasn't a great choice that of their vote. Mm-hmm. They were voting for him, but they didn't feel comfortable with it. But that's because sure. They didn't look at us as a viable alternative. They thought we were just out of touch.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And so as we're entering this period where there's a ton of energy, okay, and yes, it's all anti-Trump, the anti-Trump vote, which has always existed, okay?
Sure.
And now you get more people looking because of the economy and their stock portfolio and their healthcare benefits and their Social Security and their veterans benefits and all these cuts to programs, okay, you know, and the dollar is dropping, you know, and the fact that, you know, we're fighting with everyone at the exact same time, all of this stuff that's going on, okay, that is breeding life into the mm-hmm. Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. The one thing we can't do is fuck it up.
Okay? Yes, I avoid fucking up. That's one of my mantras.
Well, look, like... Rick, sometimes we're very capable. Okay. we're very capable.
Listen, I have seen the Democrats snatch defeat from the jaws of victory about 1,000 times. And
if so long as the American people view us as a viable alternative, then I think your prediction is correct. 26 is going to be like historically big, which is what we've mm-hmm. seen in the past. It will be
a lot of work to do.
It will be limited based on just gerrymandering that now is bigger than it has been in the past.
We're not going to get 40 or 50 seat swings anymore, correct. Folks. Just correct. Calibrate your expectations.
Right. But by the way, a 15-point swing, a 15-seat swing in the House would be enormous.
Yes.
Okay. You know, based on how the districts are. I mean, there's only 25 seats really that are up. Okay.
Correct.
For grabs. Okay. And so, you know, but we have to be focused. Economy. It's still the economy, stupid. Okay. And Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. Those are the issues. If we get off about Greenland and Canada and all and the Gulf of America, if we go down that rabbit hole,
right?
Okay, you know, or if they're able to pin us that we only care about, you know, the terrorists that they're arresting, you know, for El Salvador. If we go down that rabbit hole, and I'm not saying that there aren't people that shouldn't be there, right? And that the administration has made mistakes, and we got to fight for human rights. I'm not saying that.
Right.
I'm just saying from a messaging standpoint.
From a strictly political standpoint.
From a strictly political messaging standpoint, there are two or three messages. That is it. If we get into the 15 messages because of all of the stuff that's going on, all of the chaos, okay, and we confuse the voter, and then Trump can say they don't care about, they care more about the terror, the criminals, than they care about you, okay, we will have stepped in it. In my opinion,
I think that's right, and I think that there. I also think one of the things that we've got to be clear on is the El Salvador question right now is the biggest story after the economy, but there will be 1,000 other bullshit, weird fuck ups by Trump that will be the story for the day or the week or the month, and then it will fade back. The economy
is going to be. There is a tipping point with the El Salvador piece, right?
Sure.
Right now, the El Salvador piece is about immigration. It's an immigration piece. If he really does start transferring U.S. citizens, even though they've committed heinous crimes, and I'm very tough on that, I'm for the death penalty, okay? Mm-hmm. But if he starts transferring U.S. citizens,
Correct.
Right?
To a
foreign country.
Prison.
Mm-hmm. Okay. To a foreign country. Okay. To serve time. At that point, Democrats in the House and the Senate are going to have to figure out how to shut the process down, because now we've gone into a realm of just unconstitutional
authoritarian
behavior. Yeah. Correct. That is separate. So I don't want to discount that piece of it.
Sure.
We're not there now. We're in all sorts of talk. Okay. But if that were actually to happen, then yes, I think that would be a major.
That's issue. And especially if they become, when he joked about Truth Social the other day, like talking about shipping Tesla protesters to El Salvador.
Right.
I mean, this is not the worst of the worst or the crazies or the criminals or what have you. When he's talking about shipping U.S. citizens there, I do think you're right. I think that rises to a whole separate crisis level that we're not at yet, but we're knocking on the door. Well, Jared Moskowitz, I want to thank you so much, as always, my friend, for coming on the show. Look forward to having you back soon. Give our love to Jim Comer, as always. I know you are the Comer Whisperer. But thanks so much. Tell folks where they can find me on social.
If I literally whispered to Comer, he wouldn't hear me. I mean, that's why I have to yell. I have to yell so it like gets in there and like bing, bing, ping pongs. Like
bing, bong, bing, bong,
there's
bong.
Like, well, there's space. There's a lot of space in there. So I need it to echo inside. Okay.
Oh, my God.
Poor James. He's not as relevant anymore.
I know.
He can't impeach, you know, Biden again. You know, no one cares about Hunter anymore. He's like lost with relevance.
He's,
you know,
he's drifting.
I pointless. Went to go visit him in committee last week. Okay. I waved on to committee. And as soon as I got there, he left the room for 2 hours and never returned.
You're the best. Tell folks where they can find you on social media.
They can find me on X. They can find me on Instagram. They can find me on Facebook. It's Jared Moskowitz or Jared E. Moskowitz, depending upon whatever platform you're looking at.
All right, my friend. I'll talk to you soon.
You got it.
The Lincoln Project Podcast is a Lincoln Project production. Executive produced by Whitney Hayes, Ben Howe, and Joey Wartner-Cheney. Produced by Whitney Hayes. Edited by Riley Main. Hey, folks, if you want to support the Lincoln Project's work against Donald Trump, Elon Musk, and this MAGA craziness, go to action.lincolnproject.us/helplp. If you'd like to get in touch or have suggestions for a guest or a show topic, or just want to say hi, our email is podcast@lincolnproject.us. For our MAGA friends, please, no more nudes. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again next time.
And good luck.